The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
A Spokane man is behind bars tonight, accused of killing his daughter's boyfriend, who he believed sold his daughter into sex trafficking in Seattle.
Police say the body of the victim was found last month inside the trunk of an abandoned car. According to court documents, the father tracked the victim's movements last year and followed him to a location at Airway Heights in Spokane County. After a confrontation, the father allegedly abducted the boyfriend, tied him up, and placed him in the trunk of the vehicle. He reportedly hit the victim in the head with a cinder block and then stabbed him repeatedly. The father is being held for investigation of first-degree murder.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Wow, that's an unbelievable story, huh? People are divided over this. I heard this story last week. I didn't have a chance to talk to you about it, and I'd love to get your input on this as well. Coming up in a few moments, Monsignor Stuart Sweatland is going to be joining me, and I want to talk about murder. I want to talk about legitimate defense. I want to talk about justice. I'm talking about mercy. A lot of different things. If my daughter was sold into human trafficking, into human slavery, to be used and objectified by a bunch of lecherous individuals, and her boyfriend got a grand for it, and I found out about it, oh, man. Yeah, I'm a follower of Christ, and I'm a Catholic, right? I know what the church and what the Lord commands me to do, but boy, I can understand this father, right? Couldn't you? I mean, human trafficking right now is something that, for most people, it sounds remote, doesn't it? Oh, it happens over in Asia somewhere, right? No, I used to think the same thing. 25 million people around the world are trafficked, just to give you a startling number, 25 million. And a lot of it happens here in the U.S. Many of those are actually, you believe it or not, you might actually know someone that this happened to. There was a woman, I was shocked, where our broadcast studios are in the Green Bay market, less than 5 miles away, less than 2 miles away, there is a site where a lot of human trafficking takes place. And I had the privilege of speaking to a woman who from the area got trafficked, and she told her harrowing tale. I mean, it was the most. People say, what's some of the best? Who, tell me about the Congress people you interview. Tell me about the celebrities. Tell me about this. Tell me about who's your favorite interview. This Colleen Stratton was my favorite interview. This was a woman who told a tale that was captivating, absolutely captivating. Thank God she's free from her traffickers today. But it opened my eyes, made me realize that even in, your own backyard, whether you are living on the coast or in middle America, this type of evil takes place. If you're not familiar with this story, let me tell you about it, and let's talk about this. There was a father in Washington State, right? Hit very close to home. He's a 60-year-old man, right? His name is John Eisenman, I think. So he found out in October of last year that his underage daughter's boyfriend sold her to sex traffickers for just $1,000. Now, the good news, he was able to track her down, and he rescued her from that life of abuse. But then something else happened. The father found out where this boyfriend was. His name was Andrew Sorensen, former boyfriend, and where he was going to be. And he got there ahead of the kid. And when he arrived, he confronted him. And as you heard in the report that Maggie played, he allegedly tied up this 19-year-old with zip ties, duct taped his mouth. And then they put him in the trunk of a car. Then he drove the car to a remote area. He allegedly killed him. I think he bashed him on the head with a cinder block and stabbed him multiple times. And he abandoned this car. The kid remained there for nearly a year till somebody found the car. A very foul smell you could only imagine was coming from it. They unlocked it. The keys were in it. And there were some people, they started rummaging through it, and they found the body in the trunk. After some investigation, of course, he was arrested. Yeah, first-degree murder. He's been charged. He's now in jail. And he's got to post $1 million bond in order to get out. Now, here's the thing. Okay, let's talk about it. When it first went online, there were a lot of people, on social media, especially, they were praising this father for what he allegedly did. They called him a hero. So how do you view it? Gentlemen, if this was your daughter, and you sat on a court and this man came before you and you were a jurist, Would you throw the book at him? Or would you say, this man suffered enough, time served? Here's one of the posts on Twitter. Let me share just an example. Again, quote, this is John Iceman. John's daughter was sold into sex trafficking ring by her boyfriend for $1,000. The horror she experienced during that time were unimaginable. John eventually rescued his daughter from captivity and killed the man who sold her. This person says, John is a hero. Be like John. End of quote. So my question to you, is he a hero? Did he do the right thing? Did he do the wrong thing? How do you read this? What would you do? What kind of justice should be meted out to this father? I'm joined right now by Monsignor Stuart Swetland, president of Donnelly College in Kansas City, Kansas. You can check them out online. Great institution. Of course, he's been a colleague of mine here at Relevant Radio for a very long time and serves also as the executive secretary for the Fellowship of Catholic Scholars. So it's great to tap into his genius. Monsignor, good to have you back. Good afternoon. Hey, Maggie, is Father there? I'm not hearing him in my headsets. All right. I'll tell you what. Let me do this. If you want to get in, we'll take a few of your calls. The number is 888-914-9149. Love to hear what you would do, you know, and how justice should be meted out to this particular father. And, you know, maybe you've been through this. And maybe your daughter was sold. Maybe she's, you know, into prostitution. Maybe they were in an abusive relationship and you wanted to take the life of that man beating her or abusing the child. Maybe somebody you know is abusive. It's not just sex trafficking here. What would you have done? How would you have reacted? And what is the right thing to do? I'm going to take a short break right now. When I come back, we'll take some of your calls. We'll be joined by Monsignor Stuart Swetland as we get his connection worked out. And we'll take a look at the morality of this and more. Stay with me.
How has Relevant Radio changed your life?
I mean, you saved me. It's just really incredible. And I've given the app information out to all of my relatives. But it took a while, and I tell you, it's changed them, and I just wish more people would really just listen to it for a few weeks. You saved my life.
Touch a heart and change a soul by making a donation to Relevant Radio today.
Relevant Radio is listener-supported. Give online at relevantradio.com or on the Relevant Radio app.
The hope lives here.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, thank you for joining me. It's good to be here with you today. I'll take your calls. Again, you are always welcome anytime at our number here. It's 888-914-9149. And if you are just getting plugged in, I'm sharing kind of a disturbing story. A father's daughter was dating a guy who ended up trafficking her. He sold her for about $1,000 into a life of sexual slavery. And I had the privilege of speaking to a woman a couple of years ago. And she told me in great detail what happened to her. The drugs, the abuse, the branding, the things that happened to women. And I have two daughters. I just couldn't imagine what this father went through, knowing how these men were objectifying and abusing and using his baby girl. And the father, of course, I think he snapped. I think he just couldn't get it out of his head. Tracked this guy down, zip-tied him, duct-taped him, put him in the trunk of a car, beat him over the head with a cinder block, and stabbed him to death. And people online, when they heard the story, were saying the guy's a hero. I want to look at this through the eyes of our faith. I want to look at it morally. I want to say, you know, how do we respond when somebody abuses our child or somebody rapes us or somebody does something horrible to somebody that we love? I mean, my first reaction, and it wasn't even at the scale, I had a son who was walking down the street one night and somebody stepped out and he claims he got hit in his jaw. He swears somebody, he had a gun in his hand. I mean, it was in the middle of the night in Milwaukee. He was coming back from a basketball game at his friend's house, shattered his jaw. Maybe it was brass knuckles. I don't know. My reaction, I wanted vengeance, you know. That's not what God calls us to do, though, right? That's not what God calls us to do. For a moral perspective on this, is a good time, or a long time friend and a very bright president of Donnelly College. That's Monsignor Stuart Swetland. Monsignor, welcome back. Good to talk with you again.
Good to be with you, Drew. What a terrible story.
Yeah, it's horrific, that's for sure. And it's good to hear your voice. I like your take on that. I mean, people applauded the actions of this particular man, but as you point out, it's awful on so many levels. And I think the primary issue is, whether or not this guy is a hero, tracking down his daughter's trafficker so he wouldn't do this to anybody else, you know, and putting him out so he couldn't hurt somebody else and brutally killing him, or whether or not he's no different than the man who did this.
Right. Well, there's obviously a difference between the man who did the initial grave evil and the father who reacted to it. But both are wrong, and the old adage that two wrongs don't make a right. You know, the scriptures, we have to, first of all, think of this in terms of a Christian worldview.
Right.
And the place I immediately go is Romans 12:19. Beloved, do not avenge yourselves. Leave that to God's wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. And as a Christian people, we have to recognize that we aren't to take vengeance ourselves. And I would argue, as a social scientist, as a person who teaches the Catholic social teaching, the difference between barbarianism and civilized society is the belief in the rule of law, that we give up, if you will, things like vengeance, and we turn to a system of law that should seek true justice. And we don't want to devolve into a situation where every person is trying to avenge the wrongs that happened to them or to one of their loved ones. You know, we can think of road rage and gang violence and organized crime and drug cartels, where that happens regularly. And those are the kinds of things that any civilized society should try to be rooting out. I understand why movies by Clint Eastwood and Charles Bronson, I guess I'm showing my age a little bit, more modern, I guess, would be Rambo and Chuck Norris. Those are pretty old, too. I don't know the current ones.
Right, right.
But I understand why movies that have a lot of violence and vengeance in them appeal to our sense of justice. But we know, as Christian people and as civilized people and as people who live in a nation of laws, that we have to forego that kind of revenge. Now, that's different than an extremis situation where you're defending yourself or others. That's a whole different set of moral rules and calculation. But for this case, I think the father, while it's understandable, did not act rightly.
All right, my guest, Monsignor Stuart Sletten, will take your calls. You want to sound off, feel free to join us. 888-914-9149. Dolores is listening in Phoenix, Arizona. She wants to join the conversation with us. Dolores, hi, you're on the air with Monsignor.
Thank you. Well, I agree with both of you, in part, the Monsignor, and with you, Drew. Yes, what he did was reprehensible. However, if I were a part of his defense team, I would hire a psychiatrist or a psychoanalyst to determine if the father was temporarily insane.
Yeah, it's a good point. It'd be hard, probably, to think to. I'm not an attorney, but you know, it seemed premeditated. He had zip ties and duct tape and everything he needed to terminate the life of this individual.
But Drew, it was objectively.
Even insane people are capable of using their reason and planning something like this.
Yeah, oh, go ahead, Monsignor. Let me respond.
Well, no, I think it's exactly. While what the man did was objectively wrong, objectively evil, in seeking vengeance himself and carrying it out in such a brutal way. And I think any jury, and if I was on the defense team, I would be advocating for this, would see under the circumstances some mitigation when it came to how the case is adjudicated. Yeah. And I hope there is some mitigation, because it's understandable that the man might not be fully functioning with the freedom. And there are mitigating circumstances. We take that in consideration in our legal system, and I hope that that is taken in consideration. It still doesn't objectively change, or doesn't change the objective nature of the act, which was an evil act.
Yeah, that's a wonderful point. Hey, Dolores, thank you. I'm glad you joined us.
All right. Thank you.
Great perspective. To your point, Monsignor, and that's the case. I guess a lot of people, as I said on Twitter, they're calling him a hero. But you're right. I mean, the act itself objectively is immoral, and it's always wrong. I wonder how a jury will shake out on this, knowing the pain and suffering his daughter went through and the pain and suffering he went through, and as Dolores said, you're not in your right mind. I mean, you really, the faculty of restraint, you had to be diminished, I would think, knowing what you're going through. I consider myself a virtuous man. I tried to work on my own sanctity, but when my own son got attacked, it was a battle for me not to want to take an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. You know what I mean? It's just, that's just a human reaction to this whole thing too. So how do you process that, and how does that diminish one's culpability?
Well, it does diminish the culpability. It's still, there is objective right and wrong. And this is why we need a robust legal system. And that's at every level, including we need a healthy, good police department. So, you know, those who are advocating defunding the police and all of that are not thinking uprightly, because we need a system that allows these kinds of gross injustice. What's happened to this poor girl, young woman, and her family, it is among the worst crimes I can imagine. Yeah. And the legal system should be able to, first of all, hopefully prevent such things from happening in the future, and also punish those who are responsible for those, top to bottom, and root that kind of structure out. This is one of the reasons when people talk about victimless crimes, and they say, "Oh, there's no victim in pornography or in prostitution or whatever." No, there are real victims in those things, often like this young woman, and that's why we want a society where those things are not prevalent. And I would argue they should, in most cases, be illegal, and we should be trying to end that. There's all kinds of Catholic organizations that are working to end human trafficking, because it's a real problem in our society.
All right, move along. If you want to join us, 888-914-9149. Michael is listening in Chicago. Michael, you're on the air with Monsignor. Good afternoon.
Hello. My question is, when is vigilante justice justified? That is, I imagine, a failure of the legal system. And an example I will give is Poland under German occupation. The Polish underground government did have its own legal system, and they would have court cases, and they would often have court cases against those who had turned Jews over over to the Nazis, or had turned in Poles for, like, my great-grandma was shot for having meat, because Poles were not allowed to have meat, and the neighbors turned her in. And so when you don't have a court, when you don't have a prison system, when is vigilante justice or the death sentence, or is the death sentence allowed in these types of scenarios? Thank you.
Great. Yeah, I think in extremis, in a wartime situation when civil society is broken down, so you think of the French Resistance, or one of the most effective resistance that we don't think about a lot in the West was the Ukrainian Resistance. More troops, German troops, were tied down in Ukraine trying to suppress the Ukrainian underground rebellion during World War II than all of North Africa, all of the British and American troops in North Africa. Less German troops were tied down in North Africa than were in Ukraine, because of a very effective resistance to occupation and the German military there. But Poland, too, the underground in Poland. In extremis, this is part of the ongoing effort to try to defend society from occupation and invasion and aggression. And, of course, aggression is one of the crimes against humanity that even the UN recognizes aggression as a crime against humanity. You have the right to defend yourself and others against aggression on the nation state level. So the Polish resistance, the French resistance, the Ukrainian resistance, while there's obviously examples where they went too far, on a whole, they were justified in doing the things they did to try to overcome the occupation of their nation and the injustices that occupation that followed that occupation.
All right, Michael, I hope that helped.
Yeah.
The key there, Drew, is the difference, the in extremis. Yeah. You know, this case was not in extremis. It's not like he killed the man who held his daughter hostage while she was still hostage in an attempt to rescue her. That would have been an act of other self and other defense and may have well been justified. But in this case, it was well past. She had already been liberated. she is already safe. And, you know, he premeditatively hunted this man down, captured him, already had him subdued. He could have turned him over to the police. Yeah. He didn't do that. He went the next step to attack him and kill him brutally.
So Hugh writes to us during the show. He says, this is not the murder of an innocent person. He's a dirtbag kidnapping a human being and selling the woman as property for abuse and profit. I'm on the side of the father who's suffering through that ordeal. We're not talking about revenge here, but justice. And that, I would say, would be vigilante justice, Monsignor. I mean who's going
right,
to determine
the proper,
what is...
The proper place for justice in our society to be executed is through the court system. We are a nation of laws, not men in that sense. And we believe very strongly in the rule of law. And this is the old adage, you know, if we want to start not, you know, Thomas More in Man for All Seasons, when he's arguing with his son-in-law about knocking down the laws to get at heresy, he says, you know, to get at Satan, excuse me. And he, you know, Moore says, you would be just the man to knock down all the laws of England to get at Satan. And his son-in-law, Roper was his name. He said, yes, I would. And then Moore says, and when Satan turned on you, where would you hide? All the laws being flat. You know, you and I, and all of us, we want a robust system of law that protects all of our life, all of our property, all of those we hold dear. And if we start advocating for everyone to take justice into their own hands, it's going to be chaos. It really becomes then gang violence or something out of these current movies, which I haven't seen, where on a given day all laws are suspended, or a given week or a given period of time. We don't want to live in that kind of society.
Purge is one of those movies where people...
Okay,
do
see,
that.
You pay more attention to the modern movie than I do.
My guest, Monsignor Stuart Sputnik, if you're just joining us, a father discovered his daughter was sold into sex trafficking by her boyfriend. He got $1,000 for it. And we won't even go into the horrors that she went through. But the father found out about it, rescued his daughter, and as you heard Monsignor say, he ultimately subdued the man, but he killed him. Left him in the trunk of his car. And a lot of people are calling him a hero. And I thought today would be a good opportunity for us to take a look at stories like this and take a look at legitimate defense and murder and justice and so many things that challenge both the heart and the intellect. And Monsignor, let's take another call. We'll go to Barbara listening in Boynton Beach, Florida. Hi, Barbara. Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon. My feeling is this, and they say it's law, the law, the law. Well, I think if the law changed, and possibly in the extreme cases like this, that they castrated the abuser, then that maybe deter other potential abusers from doing such horrendous things to another human being. I mean, that girl is ruined for life. It's not a one-time thing. She will have those horrible scars and memories on her forever. Yeah. And to destroy a human being like that is, to me, I think castration would kind of even things out.
All right. Barbara, thank you. So if not murder, Monsignor, some sort of other justice other than just incarceration. Your thought on Barbara's approach?
Well, I think in our legal system, our constitutional system, it would run afoul of the amendment to our Constitution that outlaws cruel and unusual punishments. That's Amendment 8 to our Bill of Rights, or to our Constitution, in part of the Bill of Rights. That being said, I do know that in some adjudications of sex offenders, what they call chemical castration could be a requirement for parole, where they suppress the ability of the person to have normal sexual function through chemical or other means rather than physical castration. But I'm afraid in our system, while everyone understands that these things seem to be justified, it falls aground, again, of the cruel and unusual punishment that would be allowed under U.S. law. I'm not a lawyer, so that's just my read of... That would fall under that category, I believe.
Yeah, I don't know what the law in Texas is. I think somebody was telling me that if, you know, say my wife and I are at home, right, or say I come home and I find somebody in bed with my wife, I can justifiably Can you actually shoot that person? Or, I mean, and again, I'm just pulling this from the recesses of my head. Are you familiar with anything in Texas? Does Texas have different laws when it comes to what you can do?
I will defer to Texans on that. Again, I would say from a Christian point of view, that would not be the correct thing to do. It would not be the upright thing to do. I think we have to take very seriously what the Lord teaches us through his servant Paul when he says, vengeance is mine, says. It's actually what Paul's repeating in Old Testament admonition. That there's two things ultimately that God reserves to himself.
Yep.
And in this sense, our God is a very jealous God for these two things that he reserves to himself: ultimate judgment and vengeance. Those are reserved to God and God alone. And for us to take those on to ourselves is to violate the prerogatives of God, if you will, and is a serious sin.
Yeah. All right. My guest, Monsignor Stuart Swetland, and if you're on hold, thank you. I'll get to your call, I promise. The number is 888-914-9149. Christopher is listening in California. Christopher, thanks for joining the conversation.
Yes, thank you. I was in a situation with one of my daughters where a human trafficker had convinced her to marry him, and that's one of the ways that they set these women up, is to have them fall in love with him and then marry him. She ended up marrying him without my permission. I raised her in the church, but that didn't do any good for her. Then he started trafficking her. He was trafficking drugs and her both. And they ended up in New Mexico. He took her out of state and took her over to another place so that he wouldn't have any problems with anybody around.
Is Christopher still in there? Chris, you still there? Oh, I want to hear what he has to say. Christopher, I don't know. We just lost your signal for a second. I don't know whether it's on your end or ours. I'm going to give you a second to reconnect. Are you with me? All right, let me try another call. Christopher, come back. I definitely want to hear the rest of your story. Mike is listening in Lakeland, Florida. Mike, good afternoon. You're on the air with Monsignor Swetland.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Now, I'm a 71-year-old father, and I'm saved. But I think the man was justified in killing the guy. And not only that, I hope he gutted him. Because think about the father's gut. He's getting all torqued out of shape. And I'd be willing to say he wasn't in his right mind. Don't matter how long it took him to do it. I think he was off a little bit in the head. And I could see why. If somebody hurt one of my daughters, I would move heaven and earth. But with our legal system now, I could see why he went ahead and took care of it himself.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Michael, thank you. So Mike agrees with the father. And Monsignor, I wonder how it shakes out on a court of law. You know, when you sit down and you've got a jury of your peers, I wonder what the minimum sentence on something like this would be, or how that's all going to shake out. Because I think there's a lot of people like Mike who don't think a slap on the wrist or, you know, what the father did was that wrong. Maybe you can address that, but also about defending others. You know, we talk about legitimate defense, and the catechism is very clear that, you know, killing a human being is always a grave issue. It should never be taken lightly, and, you know, we can't be vigilantes. But what happens, you know, how do we distinguish a right to protect somebody else? What is our duty there, you know, and how far can one go? As you pointed out, she was not, you know, being... She was already home safe, so it was a little bit different. He rescued her already. But where do we draw the line? Is there a gray area in this? Can you kind of shake that all out for us?
Well, no, there obviously, you know, the old adage that, you know, it's very difficult to tell when the sun actually sets. You know, the twilight's always there. That doesn't mean there isn't a difference between night and day. You know, there obviously is gray area. There is obviously that in between. And we understand police officers have to deal with this every day. And in states now that have allowed people to carry guns and sometimes concealed guns and sometimes in the open, they have written laws that have made it possible to discern when someone can rightfully, as they call it, stand your ground or when they should yield that ground. And I think that's, you know, a society tries to find the right balance that defends human life, but that also defends the rule of law. We should all want our system to function so that criminals are really punished, caught and punished, by the police and by those empowered to do that in our name. Just like we don't want individuals to, you know, just take up a foreign policy on their own or start invading countries on their own because they don't like what they're doing. We shouldn't want individual citizens who aren't empowered by our system to take the law into their own hands. Mm-hmm. That being said, if you're in extremis, in a case where the only way to defend yourself and others is by the use of force, even deadly force, the law allows for that. Now, as far as the question about what the man's punishment should be, this is one of the reasons why I am not for mandatory minimums when it comes to law. I think we take the power out of judges. Judges should have the discretion, judges and juries should have the discretion to figure out what is a justified punishment in various cases. It's because we now put mandatory minimums on so many different kinds of laws that it makes these difficult cases hard to adjudicate justly.
All right. We'll move along, take another call or two. Thank you for that. Andres, listening in California. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. As I've told your screener, my answer is it depends. Now, the reason why I said that is because I know the Lord said vengeance is mine, and we cannot just have any Tom, Dick, and Harry take the law in his own hands. But I believe God gifted us also with the gift of intellect, and we know that our legal system is broken. And the way that I gathered the story, he already rescued the child. Why is the guy still free? That he had to track him down. The father had to track the perp down. This gives me the impression that the perp has connections, and you know, and can just roam around free, and you know, can get away with many loopholes. In the meantime, if that perp had his daughter trafficked, how many more other girls do you think he has captive? So I believe at that moment, while our legal system is in such a broken state, that guy, that father, is a hero. That father is justified. Unless already we have fixed... Now, if we have fixed our legal system, right. Yes, definitely that was an extreme. He should have given the guy up to the police. Okay. What do you think? I mean, that's a good. How I gather the story is, you know,
Thank you, Chris.
He had to track him down, you know.
Monsignor,
so that means he's got connection.
I'm going to let you respond. I just want to, for those who are just joining us, once again, bring them up to speed on what's happening. If you're just tuning in and wonder what the conversation's about, we're looking at taking the law into your own hand. Is it ever justifiable? There was a father whose daughter was in a relationship. As you heard my previous caller say, sometimes they do this conditioning or this grooming. Became her boyfriend, but he ended up selling her for about $1,000 into human trafficking. And I'm going to play for you in a minute some audio from a woman who was trafficked. And she told me how they used drugs to enslave her, how they gave her quotas. She had to, you know, have sex with X amount of men in order to bring so many dollars back. If she didn't, she'd be beaten. They were branded. They were totally objectified and just abused. And when the father found out that this sleazeball, this individual, I got to be charitable, sold his daughter into slavery, he flipped, and he went, and he tracked him down. He rescued his daughter, and then he tracked this guy down, and he zip-tied him, he duct-taped him, and ended up beating him, stabbing him to death, left him in the trunk of a car. That's murder, and clearly, objectively, it's wrong. Some people are saying it's not, and that this guy's a hero, because as the last caller, Monsignor, pointed out, some, you know, he might still be, you know, why isn't he already arrested, and secondly, why... you know, how many other women are being abused like this because of him? So I'll let you respond to him, but for you just joining me, that's the latest. That's what we're talking about today.
Yes, Drew, and that's the unwritten part of the story, at least in all of the resources I've seen about this, is that is unclear, and we don't know where that breakdown took place. You know, if it is corruption in the police and corruption in our legal system, then obviously that's something that every effort has to go into reform, because this is happening not just on this with this instance, but with, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of instances. I would say even where the system is corrupt, it's very, very dangerous for society to allow individuals or to think it's good that individuals would take the law into their own hands. As far as the human trafficking, which is such a problem in our society, I do want to point out that our bishops have put a coalition together. There's so many groups now working on this. Some religious women are doing some really good work on this, but there's a coalition of Catholic organizations against human trafficking. And you can go to the USCCB website and find that coalition that's working against human trafficking. There's some really good things going on. When I was on the radio at Relevant Radio, I interviewed some of the people who are involved out of Texas working some of the areas where human trafficking was taking place. So it's those are the organizations we should be supporting as we end this scourge so we don't have any of these stories in the future. But we also have to recognize our society is supporting things that make these scourges possible. Yeah. We're allowing and use illicit drugs at a way too large a level that creates the whole system where people are tempted to do these kinds of things and be involved in these kind of networks. We're also allowing pornography and prostitution to take place and turning the our backs to a huge scourge that is undermining our families and hurting our society. So there's much work to be done in this area. But I think we should work in a moral and ethical and upright way, not take the law into our own hands.
All right, my guest, Monsignor Stewart. So, Monsignor, stay with me. I'm going to take a short pause when we come back. Danny, you got a great comment. Tom, Joanne, everyone on hold, I'll do my best to get you on. Final moments of my show will soon be arriving. If you want to join the conversation, phones are always open for you. There's a line available at 877-2. That's about the pledge line. It's the line is open at 888-914-9149. And since I threw out the pledge number, let me just say thank you to you. Yeah, I'm a creature of habit. You can see how easily I can, can fall into those habits. We had our pledge drive last week, as you know, if you're a regular listener to the show. Our goal was $2.7 million, and oh my gosh, did we hit it out of the park. And that's it's entirely because of you, because of your generosity. And we're just so grateful for your yes to the mission of Relevant. And for the fact that you value the look that we give you at life, whether we're talking about a story as ugly as this one, taking the law into your own hands, or whether it is teaching the faith or having some aspect of the faith clarified for you. Relevant Radio's not only superseded a goal, well beyond it. So we're going to be here for you for months to come. And I just want to let you know it was a home run, a record-setting pledge drive. And we're grateful. I'm really thankful for you. If you're just joining me, we're talking about a father who avenged the abuse of his daughter from a human trafficker. I had the opportunity to speak to a woman named Colleen Stratford before, and her mother was heartbroken, never stopped searching for her, praying for her. Colleen joined me and bared her heart. She shared a little bit of some of what she went through. Here's Colleen Stratford. When I come back, we'll talk more. Stay with me.
He did the breaking process on me, and that would be things like he didn't allow me to sleep for long periods of time. Wow. He would withhold these drugs and alcohol from me until I was in this state of physical detox and so sick, and then he would give it to me. He would lock me in dark closets for hours on end. All of the girls were cut with 3 razor marks on their upper arms to say that we were his property. That's
branded
how we distinguished. Yeah. I had cuts on my arms from cutting myself as a child, and he would take cigarettes and put them out on my arms, and he would say, nobody's going to believe that you didn't do that to yourself. You know, he would just do things that would make me question my sanity, and that's what instills that fear, and that's what keeps the girls locked into this.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
And I don't think anyone could say it. Again, I'm speaking for myself, not even behalf of my family. But I love you just like anyone else. And I'm not gonna say I hope you rot and die just like my brother did, but I personally want the best for you. And I wasn't gonna ever say this in front of my family or anyone, but I don't even want you to go to jail. I want the best for you. Because I know that's exactly what both of them would want you to do. And the best would be give your life to Christ. I'm not gonna say anything else. I think giving your life to Christ would be the best thing that both of them would want you to do. Again, I love you as a person. And I don't wish anything bad on you. I don't know if this is possible, but can I give her a hug, please? Please.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that's a powerful moment. Maggie, open your microphone quickly. Why don't you give a little perspective on what that audio, that exchange was all about?
You bet. So that was from 2019. That was from a court case, a court hearing of a young man that had been shot by a member of the police force in Texas. And during the family's testimony, final remarks, his younger brother looked this woman in the eye that had killed his brother, and he said, I don't think I need to tell you how much of a loss my family feels. I think you already know that. But he says, I just want you to know that I forgive you and that I love you. And he, you heard at the end of that clip that he says, I don't know if this is allowed, but can I just give you a hug? Wow. And the judge finally says yes. And then there's this moment where they go and they give each other a hug. And he spends a minute while they're in embrace, and you can't hear it, but you can see that he's talking with her. And it's those moments that, like, that's a life changed. That's a life changed.
Yeah, those are haunting words, no doubt about it. Give your life to Christ. Never forget that. And it will certainly pierce the conscience and the heart. And who knows, a profound conversion might have come out of something very dark and very ugly. It's good to be with you today. If you're just joining me, I'm Drew Mariani, along with Monsignor Stuart Swetland. And we're taking a look at a case that unfolded last week where a father, the victim of human trafficking, there's about 25 million people around the world who are trafficked. And it happens here in the States. I know I used to believe it happened only overseas and not here in the States. That would never really happen. But no, it's pretty rampant here. And as you heard earlier, I spoke to a woman who talked about the branding, the cutting, the drugs, the torture that she'd go through in order to be controlled by the purpose who's profiting, you know, who's trafficking off of her body. And a father found out his daughter's boyfriend trafficked her, sold her for about a grand. And when he was able to rescue his daughter, he went ahead and killed the boyfriend. You know, he put him in the back of his trunk and stabbed him to death. And people had called him a hero. A lot of people saying, hey, you know, murder's always wrong. And I invited Monsignor Stuart Swetland to join me today here, too, to join us. And Monsignor, such a great aspect of the conversation, too. Forgiveness, redemption, conversion. We never know. I wrote in my book on Divine Mercy about a commandant from Auschwitz who was shown love and mercy. And he was put to death, and that was the justice that was given. But he was, in the interim, had the ability to convert and amend his life. His life wasn't short-circuited by somebody who just put a bullet in his head. And we've seen that in so many other cases as well, from, you know, Pranzini and Maria Goretti, et cetera. In fact, Danny in Central California, he wants to join us here. He's got a point to make. Let me bring him in, and maybe we could talk about that aspect of the conversation as well. Danny, good afternoon.
Hi, Drew and Monsignor. Yeah, that's basically the comment I wanted to make. Because when I heard this case, the two cases that came to my mind was St. Maria Goretti, and the man who murdered her went through the legal system and was, you know, confined in prison, but he had a conversion and he repented. And the other case that brings to mind is the doctor who was convicted of molesting the gymnast in
Larry Nassar.
USA.
Yeah, Larry Nassar.
There you go. Yep. Yes, and he also was convicted, and there was a powerful victim statement at his sentencing. I actually heard it on your program, where one of the gymnasts, she said that she forgave him, and that she was praying that he would come to realize what harm he had done, and he would come to repentance and come to the Lord. And when we see cases like this, where people take justice into their own hands, they're denying the perpetrator to come over to Team Jesus, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. And so I'm totally against vigilantism in this regard. And if I could add one more thing, the people saying that it's justified and somehow it's self-defense. Yep. Think about abortion. There's been cases where people have been convicted murdering abortion doctors.
Yep.
But you know, having the same logic, somehow they're defending it, and that's just not right, even though it's an evil. But you can't really justify one evil with another one.
Dan, such good points. They're wonderful, wonderful points. I'm so grateful that you brought up that aspect of the ability for God's grace to work and this soul God loves. He told St. Faustina, the greater the sinner, the greater the right they have to my mercy. Doesn't matter how dark the soul is, you know, they have a right to God's mercy, and heaven rejoices over it. But also to the second point, too, about, let's say you murder somebody who is terminating children, aborting these kids, these abortionists. Monsignor, let's talk about those two points there, if we could. Let's start first with some of the great examples he gave. Maria Goretti, you know, appearing in the jail cell, and we see the great conversion of the man who raped her, Alessandro, and put her to death, or the gymnast with Larry Nassar, or St. Therese praying for the murderer who had a deathbed conversion, if you will. And there's so many of those. Let me throw that to you and let you respond.
Well, that's why Daniel was given a great worldview. He sees that we should not want even the biggest reprobate to be lost for all eternity, and that we have to keep that supernatural worldview. That's one of the reasons why Paul teaches us that that the vengeance is mine, says the Lord. Mm-hmm. We leave that to God. God at the end will punish those who deserve the punishment and do not repent. So we do not have to worry about, ultimate justice. God will deal with that. But also that worldview that recognizes, that Catholic worldview, that a good end does not justify a bad means. Both the end and the means must be good. As I began the show, I talked about my misused youth that enjoyed the Clint Eastwood and the Charles Bronson revenge movies where they take the law into their own hand and kill everybody that they think is bad. You know, you might say justice was done in those movies. That's why it satisfies something in us innate, because we all want to see justice done. But the problem with those kind of vigilante acts is it's a bad means. It's an immoral means to a justified end, perhaps assuming the end is justified. Both from a Catholic perspective, both the means and the end must be good to make the act good.
That's very well said. Danny, thank you for your call. It is good to have you with us. Tom is listening in California. Tom, thank you for your patience. Good afternoon.
Yeah, thank you, Drew, and thank you, Father Sweatland. I just want to say real quickly, I've spent 28 years working in the penal system, so I have a little familiarity with those who are incarcerated from serious, serious crimes. So that's one, I work with them. And secondly, my heart goes out to the Father. I hope I would have the grace and the level of holiness to restrain myself. But this is my point. God, when I think of this, and he tells us, vengeance is mine, he's thinking of our sanctification. He's thinking over our lifetime. And the devil is thinking, I'm going to destroy twofold. One, an innocent life, the girl, and now the father. Both of them are going to be destroyed, and he's laughing. The also flip side is, it's so easy to accuse somebody of something, and if your passions are governing your heart, your energy, you're no longer thinking. Your intellect is not involved. And pretty soon we can step out and we can kill an innocent person thinking that we were justified. Was this man guilty? From all sounds of it, he was. But I can just say, as a Catholic Christian, I'm thinking my eternal salvation. I'm thinking, as some of the other callers have spoken about, is about the conversion of that man who, by the way, if you kill him too soon, he may have knowledge that we could get out of him in order to save other innocent women who we may not be aware of. Those are my thoughts.
Great thoughts, Tom. Hey, thank you. I love the perspective that it gave. So the last point first, Monsignor, by taking justice in your own hands, you could leave so many other women right now who are in the slavery of human trafficking in that life. So that's a great point. But the other thing, too, I thought was so brilliant, something I did not think of, and it's the way Satan works. When he destroys one person of the family, you can see how he dances with joy as that ripples out and affects so others. So it was not just his daughter, but the father was also victimized by this whole thing. I only have a couple minutes left, Monsignor, so I want to give you some final thoughts on those two points.
Well, I hope this is a great segue, really. The last point I wanted to make, Drew, is that one of the places where it broke down was the community failed to support this family in their time of need in such a way that they didn't feel they had to, or the father did not feel that he had to take things into his own hands. So the importance of a community reaching out to those who have had these kind of tragedies. I know it can be difficult, having been a pastor, now I'm a pastor again, of a parish, you know, to want to, if someone's hurting, think, we'll leave them alone, we'll let them heal. But what they need the most when they've been through something like this is a loving, supporting, praying community that reaches out to them in their needs and keeps them from doing the worst impulses they want to do at that moment. So I think in that sense, I wish the community had reached out more to this family and helped them in their time of need. It may have saved this further tragedy.
Yeah. Monsignor, thank you for so much time. I'm really grateful for it and for all that you do. I hope people will check you out at Donnelly College there in Kansas City, Kansas. People want to check out the college that you are president of. How do they do that? What's the best way to connect with you?
Donnelly.edu, and they'll see all the good things going on here at Donnelly College.
All right, let's do this again, okay? I always love sharing the mic with you. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you. God bless you and all your listeners, Drew.
God bless you. Say a prayer for Monsignor Swetland. I hear my closing bumper. That means I'm out of time for the day. I'm sorry about that. I'm so grateful, though, to be able to look at these really important issues with you and through the eyes of faith. Let's pray for all those facing these challenges. Let's pray for one another. I promise you my prayers tonight. Until we talk again tomorrow. Remember, God loves you, and so do I. Have a great day.